Hey everyone, this is John, and this is the Nintendo, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. This will function as the official show for the month of January 2017. This will be episode number 75, but it will be the official show really in name only. Usually we do things like talk about news and new releases and preview the month of February. We already covered most of the news in the Switch event and the Fire Emblem Direct. Not too much else. I mean, there are a few tidbits here and there, but not too many major stories. The only new release is Dragon Quest VIII, and February, I believe the major new release is going to be Yoshi and Poochie's Woolly World. So I'm going to take a sidestep, do something a little bit different here. As you can tell, I am solo. Wes and Ryan are not here. We'll be all back together for the Pokemon show in a few days. So I'm going to take a sidestep, and I'm going to talk about my personal top 15 Wii U eShop games, as well as my personal top 15 Wii U games. And since Wes never owned a Wii U, and Ryan did own a Wii U, but didn't have a very expansive library, I am going to go ahead and push forward for this top 15 solo, which we usually do at the end of a console or handheld life cycle. So the Wii U is dead. Long live the Switch. Let's just kick things off with, I'm going to start with the eShop games. I don't have any honorable mentions here. I just got my 15. We do not rank our top games when we do a top 15 for a particular system. We just go alphabetically. We do this because it is just way too difficult to determine if, you know, Pikmin 2 is actually a better game than Mario Sunshine, because they are such different games. So up first is Affordable Space Adventures, and this was a game that Wes, Ryan, and I actually all played together, not necessarily start to finish. I think Ryan was kind of in and out, but really fun cooperative experience, and really embodied what Nintendo was saying a lot about the Wii U when it was announced, when they talked about things like asynchronous multiplayer, because you have the players who serve very specific functions on that ship. Most notably, it's like the pilot and the engineer, and then the third player will end up being the sort of third wheel that takes over minor functions, which is still fun to take over the minor functions. And this game is just prime for trolling, because every player can just do things to totally fuck up the other ones and result in some really funny deaths, and also some really clever puzzles that force you to really learn the intricacies of the different functions of the ships and how they all work together, and how they're all useful in certain scenarios. So this one, highest possible recommendation for a Wii U eShop game. Really great game. It has some DLC as well that has some really fucking impossible puzzles to it. I don't think we ever figured out a single one of those DLC puzzles to it. But just a really interesting structure in the main campaign, because like most video games, you start out with this minimal set of skills, this minimal set of functions on your ship. And throughout the game, more will become activated and you can do more things and the puzzles get more complex. Then what happens toward the end is you start to lose some of those functions, and it makes you really more, it allows you to rely on certain things and then starts to take them away. So it's a really interesting way of just wrapping up the entire puzzle experience right there at the end. Next up is Axiom Verge. And this may be one of the more recent eShop games that I've spoken about on the podcast. It's been a few months now, but I gave a few wrap-up thoughts and mentioned how impressive it was. I was one guy who made the game, and it is. I think that I may have come off as a bit negative on the game, sort of questioning the way that it was structured. But, you know, overall, as a game experience, it's a really solid 2D side-scrolling shoot 'em up game, or not really a shoot 'em up game, but a side-scrolling shooter like a Metroid. It shares more similar structural elements with a Castlevania game, which is not in any way a negative thing. But I think that the really clever use of power-ups how it doesn't rely on the same tropes as you would think of as a Metro game. It finds its own way to get you through certain obstacles and challenges. It does not feel derivative in any way. And just the sheer amount of power-ups. There's so much, like, just unnecessary guns that you can go and get. There are upwards of a dozen different guns, and none of them are really necessary for progression. There just might be a handful of guns that are actually like your keys to certain gates that you need to get through, so metaphorically speaking. But there are just all these other ones hidden throughout the map. And one of the most fun parts I had in the game was just retraversing the map and finding hidden areas on my own, and like pulling up an FAQ actually, and like looking at someone else's map of where things are scattered and trying to make my way there on my own. So that is Axiom Verge, and we are trying something totally different here now. Ripley has joined in the podcast. Ripley is 4. Ripley is eating a cracker, and Ripley is sitting next to me and watching Super Mario 64, and she, you know, controls Yoshi pretty well. She's playing on the DS. Thank you. She's playing on my 3DS. She controls Yoshi pretty well, but she'll probably ask me for help when she falls into the water. But I'm going to try to press on, and this is entirely possible that it will get cut, and I'll start over, but we'll see where this goes. Next up on the list is Bit Trip Runner 2, Future Legend of Rhythm Alien, I think is the absurd subtitle. But this was one of the original eShop games, and it is a really fun rhythm game wearing the mask of a platformer, because it has like all these different obstacles that you jump over and block and slide under and this and that. Well, it has all these different mechanics, so by the end of the game you're using almost the whole controller, and it just becomes this like trance-like hypnotic experience where once you get into this rhythm of playing the game, you almost forget about what you're doing, and it just becomes instinctive and muscle memory to execute the maneuvers you need to execute. And a lot of times you'll end up finishing a level and snapping out of this hypnotic state, like, oh, okay, it's over. So just a really fun, quirky, crazy experience with these really like pastel color palette and stupid crazy characters like a reverse merman and this pickle that you play as, and it just embraces the stupidity and absurdity that you can only embrace through video games. Just one of my favorite eShop games, and I was actually playing more of it on a harder difficulty level the other day, just trying to beat some high scores that some people on my friends list had set. So really, really, really fun game. So up next, another early eShop game, The Cave. And this is one that I actually got a lot more out of than I thought I would. Especially like my wife, Des, she ended up playing a ton of this game. Just played through like, she likes three characters, and I forget who they are. One of them is certainly the twins, but I forget the other two characters that she really likes. But she always plays through as the same characters, and sometimes she'll mix it up every now and then. But she'll go through a stretch where, you know, she hasn't played for a few months, and then for about a week she'll play through a couple more times. But there are 7 playable characters, and you take 3 at a time if you're not familiar with the way this game is set up. And it's this really fun adventure game, and it's made by Double Fine, who I wish had brought even more games onto Nintendo platforms, because they really do these fun adventure games that I really like a lot. Where, you know, it's a typical adventure game set up as a 2D side-scrolling platformer, where you're bringing items to particular locations to in order to use them in the correct way. Just solving these puzzles, these lateral puzzles, where you need to solve things in a certain order and enable to just unlock your exit effectively. But some really fun settings. Oh, you see a bunny, huh? Chase that bunny. Some really fun settings, some really fun little character moments. Just, I don't really have too much else to say about it. Just a really fun experience. It's one that, you know, I got surprisingly more out of than I thought I was going to. Next up is Child of Light. This would be the 5th one on the list here. And Child of Light, I only played through it once, but it's this RPG experience that really stuck with me, especially the way that the battles worked out. Because and I talked about this before, a long time ago when this game was new. It's an active time bar, but everyone shares the same active time bar. And what you are trying to do is use your own character's techniques in order to, bless you, in order to set back your enemies on this time bar and so that you execute more moves than they can. And there was one character in particular that was really effective. Is that fun? You jumping? There was one character in particular that was really effective at setting enemies back so I could just stack these turns on turns, but unfortunately that character does not last through the entire game, which was sad. Just a really fun battle system, and like the exploration throughout the world. It's a 2D side-scrolling game with this really beautiful art style. The world exploration was also really fun. I didn't really pay too much attention to the story, which is something that some people had complained about, but for me, it was just this superficial element that didn't seem to matter at all. Yeah, really, really haunting, tender music as well. Just an overall really enjoyable experience. Okay, and I think Ripley is done squirming in her stool. Hello! High five! Yeah, high five! How fun! And she's moved on to the minigames. It's a great song. Next up on my list is Costume Quest 2. That is another one from Double Fine. This one is not so much a straight up adventure, although there are pretty heavy adventure elements in it. But this one is presented much more as an RPG. So you have a couple of playable characters, three playable characters at any given time, and it is Halloween, and there is time travel involved, which makes everything better. And you are going through, the character classes you are basically the costumes that you're wearing. So you have like ones like a superhero, and you have candy corn, which is absolutely fucking useless. There's a pterodactyl, there's a wizard, and there's a few other things. And a lot of these are going to play out. Like your wizard is of course your mage character. But they all have like this unique skill, and it's a really simplistic battle system where you basically have like an attack and then a skill, and there's a card system which the function of eludes me right now. Oh, that gives you extra turns or stat debuffs and buffs and stuff like that. But the overall like battle system of the game on the Wii U was a bit choppy, and I wish they had spent a little bit more time optimizing the entire thing. But you know, if you can look past some technical issues, what you end up having is this adventure game where there are these really cool environments to explore and solve puzzles in, and then you get into these RPG battles where you just have like these kooky animations and fun skills to use and all these fun little classes to experiment with and mix and match and have characters try different ones and see how all their skills work together. Just a really enjoyable experience, just like The Cave. I ended up liking it a lot more than I thought it was going to. A really cool game. And then the game that I've probably played the most, not only on the eShop, but probably my most played Wii U game, is Dr. Luigi. And I, of course, am getting a lot of help from my wife, Des, on this one as well, because she played a ton of Dr. Luigi. And for a game that was just kind of like this, it kind of seen as this throwaway experience, just this reskin of Dr. Mario at the end of the Year of Luigi, which I think was 2013, seems like such a long time ago now. I got so much out of this game because it's, especially with off TV play, it's just really easy. Like, all right, I don't really want to invest time and energy into playing anything right now. Just turn on the gamepad, put something on Netflix, and chill out with Dr. Luigi, because you just put it on like the classic mode and you're essentially just playing Dr. Mario. And it's just this really addictive formula where, to me, I prefer it to something like a Tetris, because Dr. Luigi has like that end in sight. You have like this goal, you have this puzzle to solve, and then you get to the end of it by clearing all those viruses. It does have the Luigi mode that has the L-shaped block, so you have the blocks that are shaped like the second worst Tetris piece. But it just going on classic mode and putting on the Fever music and playing for like 20 minutes turns into 30, turns into 45, turns into, oh God, it's been an hour and I'm still playing Dr. Luigi. I think I put like over 200 hours into Dr. Luigi, and I'll probably play some later today unless my 3DS finishes charging. So yeah, what an invaluable package. I think it only came out like $15 and I've gotten hundreds of hours out of it. It's been like a really worthwhile and fun experience. Next up is The Fall, and it's another adventure game, much like The Cave. This one is not nearly as quirky or comedic. This is a much more severe, stark game with the dark, ominous tones. But it is an adventure game just the same, where collecting items and solving puzzles. Puzzles are probably a little bit more challenging in The Fall, so this is the one to go with if you're looking for a real heavy challenge. But I really love the tone of this one. I really love the visual style. Everything is just very dark. Oh, and there's this cover shooter mechanic even, where you have enemies and you have to duck behind cover before you can take them out, because you like peek out from behind the cover and shoot them. But the puzzles are all very clever. There are some real head scratchers in this one, but once you get on a roll and build some momentum, you can clear out some areas very effectively. Just a really fun setup for an adventure game where you're playing as the AI in a suit and your host is injured, and then you like it goes into all these existential questions of like how far can a computer program go to bend its programming, the rules of its programming, in order to protect its host. There's still supposed to be a sequel to this one day, and I hope that we get word of it coming to Nintendo systems when it does come time for it to come out, because I'd really like to see what else that this developer can do with an adventure game, because I think they have a really solid effort in The Fall. Next up, we are over to the G's, and I believe this is number 10, if I'm not mistaken. But Guacamelee Super Turbo Championship Edition, and this is a game that tons of people have heaped all sorts of praise upon. A really fun Metroid-style game where you play as a wrestler and all of your wrestling powers act as these gates to these keys to unlock your metaphorical gates. And it's just a really fun, colorful, quirky visual style. Instead of being a morph ball, you turn into a chicken. It's just stupid and silly. The one complaint that I would leverage against this game is that sometimes they throw you into these kill rooms, and the combat, while fun, sometimes just gets way too hectic to be comprehensible. So you end up just kind of mashing buttons until you're able to get through it all. I didn't feel like the combat, when trying to fight a horde of enemies at one time, was the game's strongest suit. Like fighting a couple of enemies at a time, the combat's really fun. You're actually able to pull off these cool wrestling maneuvers and like you doing like quarter circle mechanics and stuff. It actually feels a lot like a fighting game. Oh yeah, you're doing a drawing. How fun. But yeah, Guacamelee, just a really cool Metroid-style game with its own flair to it. And actually, the studio Drinkbox actually has another game out on Wii U and 3DS that I've been looking forward to trying. And maybe I'll get to it before the Switch comes out. We'll see how everything rolls out. But anyway, I digress. Let's move over. Next one on my list. And this one, I never actually finished. This one's Knit Underground, and this one is basically on my list because of the visual style. This is another sort of adventure game, but it's more of a free-roaming exploration-style adventure game where a lot of the appeal of this one is going through and looking at these really beautiful environments, and this is another one that's a very early Wii U eShop game. I never finished it. Some of the puzzles got, not necessarily the puzzles, but some of the exploration, you get bogged down and lost in certain areas. And that's kind of what happened to me in this particular game. I don't think, this game really lacked any sense of direction, and a little bit of sense of direction would have helped out this game a lot. But when you actually enter new areas and see all like these gorgeous landscapes and environments that you're in and just start exploring and figuring some things out, that's where this game really shines. Next up, Level 22, which is a game, another recent one, probably this one just before Axiom Verge, I think, is when I talked about this one. It is a stealth game with a unique setting. You're a guy trying to sneak into his office building. I think we talked about the setup on this one before. And I won't spend too much time on this one because we talked about it so recently. But yeah, just a really fun concept for a stealth game. And it executes a lot of puzzles really well. Turn. Oh, I'm going to draw now? Okay, how about I write your name? Ripley. Do you like that? How fun. Are you going to erase it? Bye-bye. How about R. What's next?
I.
What's next?
P.
P. What's next?
L.
L.
E.
E.
What?
Y. Ripley. Good job.
One more time.
One more time? Okay. What comes first?
One more time.
One more time. R. I. P. L. E. Y. Ripley. How fun.
Yeah.
Next up on my list is level 22, and I already said that. So, yeah, I think that it has a few mechanics that it pulls off really well and does a good job of mixing up just the order that you're supposed to do things in order to keep all of the mechanics fresh. Next up is NES Remix and NES Remix 2. Sometimes we cheat on this podcast and combine games in one franchise. We did the same thing with Mario Galaxy 1 and 2 with...
Your turn.
My turn for what?
It's all a paper, right,
but I need that paper.
No?
It has my list on it. I can't just make things up as I go. We also did the same thing with like Twilight Princess, Skyward Sword. Pikmin 1 and 2 were the same thing. No More Heroes 1 and 2 were on the same slot. So just because it's hard to determine... What game has more value than the other? Mario Galaxy 2 is probably a better game than Mario Galaxy, but it's standing on Mario Galaxy's shoulders. So we're not going to make a value judgment on which one is better than the other because they are so closely related. So NES Remix 2 does have better games than NES Remix. And maybe the plan was always to do both an NES Remix 1 and 2, but they allowed themselves to use weaker games at the start in order for them to have the formula really refined when they did NES Remix 2. So NES Remix 2 feels like a more realized package and a more fun package because you are dealing with better games. You got a lot to say over there, Ripley, don't you? There's Yoshi. Can you make him run? Oh, don't go in the water. Oh, and you're in the water.
Yay!
Yay, water. Let's swim out of the water now. Hey, only one of us can control this at once, little girl. All right, well, you try to get out of the water then. So next up, speaking of unwieldy controls, up next is Octodad Dadliest Catch. And this game is on my list for the sole reason that it is gameplay done as comedy. And it is a game where it suffers from really severe technical issues on the Wii U. There are times where the frame rate chugs at like 1 or 2 frames per second. Maybe that's an exaggeration. Maybe like 7 or 8 frames per second. But and has these really frustrating moments. But a lot of the game, when it's running well, still has these frustrating moments. But everything is so silly. And it's silly because the controls are so unwieldy and you are knocking things over, meanwhile trying to conceal the fact that you are an octopus. And it makes like doing the most simple things really difficult. Oh, now you want help getting out of the water? Okay. It makes it really tough to do things like go grocery shopping, which is one of the things we really talked about, or climb up a little play area at a aquarium, which I didn't realize aquariums had play areas, but neither or arcades, but neither here nor there. Is it funny? Is Yoshi funny? But look at those butterflies. Do you like those butterflies? Cackling like a mad woman. But Octodad is one of the first times I've seen just pure gameplay used for the purpose of comedy, for absurdity. Next up, and we're coming toward the end of the list here, is Shovel Knight. Really amazing game. An imagining of what this sort of game, an imagining of an NES-style platformer, of course, done with more technical proficiency, more technical resources. But what a great throwback to an NES-style action platformer and does such a great job of having just really intuitive gameplay design to teach you how to do things by making you do them and then adding a lot more complexity and combining skills. Just a masterful example of design. And so much content to as well, not only the main quest, but then the Plague of Shadows, and now the Spectre Knight quest is going to be coming out pretty soon. A reason to keep my Wii U hooked up in one room or another, you know, aside from my backlog of a dozen or more eShop games that I do want to get to as well. But yeah, just what a great package, what a great Kickstarter example done right. Because they promised all these things and they're delivering, and despite people's best efforts, they don't want more money for all of it. And there's an amiibo, which is pretty cool. And last up on my list of best eShop games, another adventure game. Oh, you need help getting out of the water again? Okay, hang on. The last eShop game that I have on the list is Stick It to the Man. And this one is another side-scrolling adventure game, much like The Cave or The Fall. This one, even more quirky and silly than The Cave, definitely reflects in the sort of like Cartoon Network style visuals. I think like even more so than The Cave, and especially The Fall, it's much more of a use the right item in the right place style adventure game, even though those other two games do heavily rely on those mechanics as well. This one, you are essentially like ripping things out of the world and sticking them, much like a sticker, in the correct place in order to progress. There's not much going on in the way of platforming or world exploration. You have like these much more confined areas, and it's much more about to following the steps. It's a little bit less lateral, so to speak, with backtracking, grabbing things from different places that you've already been. Again, just a really fun, quirky, stupid visual style, and a game that certainly does not take itself seriously, but has a lot of really fun and clever puzzles to it. So those are my personal top 15 eShop games. I'm going to take a break. It is time to put Ripley to bed, so hopefully the second half of the show here will be a little bit less chaotic with a few less interruptions, but I'm going to come back with my personal top 15 Wii U games. Kick off my top 15 Wii U games with my honorable mentions, and like the rest of the list, I'm going to put my honorable mentions in alphabetical order. First up, Kirby and the Rainbow Curse. This game was a game that I was pretty down on when it came out and when I was talking about it. After letting some time pass, I'm still not super positive on the game, but I still think it is at least worth mentioning because I actually had a lot of fun with this one in multiplayer when someone else was playing as Kirby, because it just lets you be so much more explorative with the game and really kind of look around and not have to worry about constantly drawing paths in front of you to keep Kirby moving in a certain way. Having those Waddle Dees in there to carry Kirby, both metaphorically and literally, or figuratively and literally, I should say, makes it so much more fun and rewarding to take a look around the world and see what all it has to offer and really appreciate the visual style. Because when you're playing as a Waddle Dee, you can actually look at the really nice visuals on your HD TV instead of having to stare at the Wii U gamepad to draw. Next up, probably a little bit of a controversial pick, but an honorable mention goes to Mario Kart 8, because And then this one, I'll mention these two together. Mario Kart 8 and Super Smash Bros. Are getting honorable mentions. And really, it's not due to the design of the game. Both of these games are really well made. All the bloat going on in Super Smash Bros. Notwithstanding, Sakurai really knows how to balance a fighter. That is something he's very good at. These games go on my honorable mentions list mostly because of my lifestyle at this point. I don't have as much time or as many people over to play multiplayer games anymore. And even with the online components, I really just enjoy couch co-op more. So these end up as honorable mentions just because of my personal preferences of how I play the games. I did not end up playing either of these games as much as I did Mario Kart Double Dash or Melee, or even as much as I ended up playing Mario Kart Wii and Super Smash Bros. Brawl on the Wii. I played those games much more than these two. And that's no fault of the games themselves. I would say that Mario Kart 8 and Super Smash Bros. On Wii U are better games than Mario Kart Wii and Super Smash Bros. Brawl. But I just didn't get as much out of them because that's, you know, I got two kids and, you know, a lot of friends of mine don't have enough time to come over and play video games for a few hours anymore. It's just not... This is not how we live our lives after the age of 30. So I'm going to continue with some honorable mentions here. Paper Mario Color Splash gets an honorable mention. The second half of that game really picks up. It has some really creative level designs. Resident Evil Revelations. I struggled with this one because I would technically put it on the 3DS list. There are a couple of games that are available on the Wii U eShop that were on the 3DS eShop first. So I set them aside. Games like SteamWorld Dig. It will most likely end up on a top 15 3DS eShop game. Even though it's probably a better game than some of the games on my Wii U eShop list, I wanted to save that one for 3DS because that's where I experienced it the most. So Resident Evil Revelations I struggled with because I had it on 3DS first. I actually didn't like it very much on 3DS. When I played it on Wii U, I liked it a lot better. And it's a game that is not perfect by any means. It's a little bit too focused on the action segments. I liked what they did with the boat and sort of bringing back some of the lateral puzzles of the older Resident Evil games, but in the end, all of the action segments, and especially like the water sections, really bogged it down, and I couldn't get into it as much as some other games. This is why I didn't end up on my top 15. Then also Splatoon, a game that I really respect what they are going for. But again, those persistent online games are not my style, so it did not end up in my personal top 15. And Wonderful 101, a game that is frustrating beyond no bounds, really clever gameplay design, really clever ideas, very difficult. And it is that difficulty that kept it from being really accessible and really letting me get deep into it, and probably what's prevented it from being on my top 15. So anyway, those are my honorable mentions. Let's get right into the nuts and bolts. Even though Wonderful 101 did not make it, there is a representation from Platinum on this list, and that is, of course, Bayonetta 1 and 2. And like I mentioned before, I will combine those games of similar franchises, or the same franchise, I should say. I wouldn't combine just similar franchise ones. This one just has these really great, almost fighting game-esque mechanics of stringing together combos and racking up your score. It can be very frustrating at times. Both of these games, the difficulty is very high, but when you're doing well, it feels really good to just take on these enemies. And it has just these really epic boss battles. It has all this visual spectacle to it. Yeah, just a really fun, infuriating character action game that I'm really glad it came to the Wii U, and I hope that we do get a Bayonetta 3 on the Switch, because just this crazy, insane, bombastic, batshit nuts type of gameplay and presentation that I really enjoy that Platinum is able to produce here. And I'm really glad we're able to get them both, and I was able to play both Bayonetta and Bayonetta 2. Up next on my list, the second game is the diametric opposite to Bayonetta. It is Captain Toad Treasure Tracker. And I just really loved the puzzle block presentation and progression in this game. It's this sort of light, even though in some cases it does get very hectic and complex. But most of the time, it's just those very light. And you just figure out this small little puzzle, get to the end, find your way to the end. And then, of course, if you're like going for all the little collectibles, it does get a bit tougher, offers a decent amount of challenge. Just a lot to this game, a really great package. There's tons of little levels for you to go through. Just a really ingenious reuse of the Mario 3D World engine for them to be able to just pump out another game really quick and get a little bit more software onto the 3DS. And yeah, I had a great time with Treasure Tracker. Number three on the list is Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze. And as I was going through my list here, figuring out what I was going to cut, I put little dots next to ones that absolutely had to be on the list. And Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze is one that absolutely had to be on the list. And just a really tough, satisfying 2D side-scrolling game that has the four different playable characters, in co-op anyway, has the different playable characters. Player one always has to be DK. I don't know if I clarified that the last time we talked about this game. It has a really fun, creative level designs and just feels really good to control and play as DK and all the different characters. It has experiments with all sorts of different mechanics, with climbing on walls and stuff. It just takes Donkey Kong Country Returns to the next step and has this overall package that is challenging and rewarding and creative and crazy, and every single stage in that game just seems to one up the next in terms of just how nuts and fun everything can be. And it does fix a lot of well, maybe not a lot of things, but it does it abandons certain things from Donkey Kong Country Returns, with like the blowing on the little leaves, swimming is back into it. Just a really great improvement. And I wouldn't necessarily want to see Retro doing another Donkey Kong Country again, but I would like to see Donkey Kong Country continue as an ongoing franchise here. Next up on my list, Fatal Frame, Maiden of Black Water. And I ended up enjoying this game a lot more than I thought it would. And I found myself thinking about this game quite a bit, especially when trying to put together a list of the best games. And this game is on the list probably partially because it's just so tonally different, just for the sake of variety, from the rest of the games. I don't, like, if I were just making an objective list, what are the best games, it probably wouldn't end up on the list just because games like Mario Kart 8 and Super Smash Bros. And Splatoon are probably better crafted games from a technical as well as a design standpoint. But just playing through the game just has this really haunting atmosphere. Very tense moments. They did such a great job of creating a feel, and they don't do it just through visual style. They also do that through just the mechanics that you have to use with doing something like taking a picture, being like the most passive way of trying to fight off enemies that you can possibly have, and like having to take those pictures and having to like relatively close to enemies. So you're this completely vulnerable character, and you have to get in close to enemies in order to fight them off. You can't just run and take them out from a distance. It's a franchise that I think this is the first game of the franchise I had ever played. And it's a really interesting one, and I hope it continues. And I hope that Koei Tecmo continues to bring this franchise to Nintendo systems, because just what a atmospheric, creepy series of games that I really do hope continues. Next up on the list, Hyrule Warriors. And again, a game that, you know, if I were to see a list of Wii U games and like a description of what they were like before the Wii U came out, I would probably not expect this game to end up on my top 15. But I spent a lot of time with this game, and even like replaying maps that I'd already beaten, just so much fun and satisfying to just be this empowered character and mow down enemies. And I think I've talked about Hyrule Warriors versus Bayonetta in the past, because those games came out in similar time frames, I think in the same year even. But I think that what I appreciate about Hyrule Warriors is more of this macro management of a battlefield. And it's something that I didn't expect out of the Dynasty Warrior, out of a Musou game, out of a Dynasty Warriors game, because it's not something that people talk a whole lot about. And maybe, I don't know, maybe this isn't how other Dynasty Warrior games are, but you have like these keeps and these outposts that you capture, and you're able to spawn your own forces. And it's just really fun to go throughout a map and try to capture all of those. And that's how you find a lot of like side items and power-ups. But it adds this macro layer of strategy to, you know you have other characters and generals out there, and you want to put them in the best position to help you out on the rest of the battlefield. So you go around, you capture outposts and keeps around them and try to keep your lines of defenses intact when you have outposts and keeps under attack. It just adds this layer of strategy to it that I did not expect out of a Warriors game. And it's not a thick layer. This isn't like a deep strategy game. But I'd be interested to see a Warriors game, and maybe Fire Emblem Warriors could be like this. I'd be interested to see a Warriors game where capturing and maintaining your defenses takes more of a spotlight position, more of a primary game mechanic than just mowing down enemies and pulling off these crazy combos, which are fun. And Hyrule Warriors does a lot of really fun things with just stupid, crazy characters. But just a little bit more depth to the gameplay would be kind of cool to see in the future, especially when it comes to just this overall battlefield management stuff. The sixth game on my list is Zelda, The Legend of Zelda, Wind Waker HD, and Twilight Princess HD. And I guess you can probably throw Breath of the Wild on there too, unless it just totally sucks, which is highly doubtful. But yeah, sadly we did not get an original Zelda game within the, accepted lifespan of the Wii U, even though it is still coming out on the Wii U. And, you know, they really need to break this trend of having Zelda games come out at the tail end of a console life cycle. I think I've ranted about that before. It's just unfortunate. It's cool that we're getting Breath of the Wild as a launch game on Switch. I think that's very cool. But if we are getting into year 5 of the Switch and the replacement is coming and they're releasing another dual system Zelda game, I just think that it's not best for their software ecosystem for that to be the general trend. I digress. Wind Waker HD, what really great gameplay improvements they made with the sail and just being able to warp around easier, travel easier. I think that having the higher resolution and the better draw distance makes that game, like, it makes going out there on the ocean look a whole lot better as well. Really, really fun Zelda game. Definitely a high quality Zelda game, even though it's not necessarily my favorite, my personal favorite, or even my personal favorite top 5 of Zelda games. But I mean, that's like being the shortest giant in the room. It's still a really awesome Zelda game. Really great combat, really great additions to the combat with that parry attack that they had in there. So it's a game with this really fun, goofy art style, and has these really tense, serious moments with these funny little characters with oversized heads. It just makes this game like a really unforgettable experience. And of course, Twilight Princess HD, which would rank very highly and my own personal favorite Zelda games. Twilight Princess, to put it in Jeremy Parrish's words, just delivers on a lot of the promise of what a 3D Zelda game could be, on what Ocarina of Time tried to do on their first try. And Ocarina of Time is a very good game, probably one of the most important video games ever made. Twilight Princess takes that Zelda formula that they established in A Link to the Past, and that they continued on with Ocarina of Time, and a little bit in Wind Waker, even though Wind Waker was a little bit of an abbreviated version of that formula, but took that formula and really brought it into this modern era of game design, where you have this world with a lot of people in it, and a lot of things to do in it and these very sprawling, expansive dungeons, and gets very experimental with the dungeons, especially in the second half. And I talked about this earlier this year when the game was new, but asks these questions about what Zelda dungeons are constructed to be, or how you construct a Zelda dungeon with these wild card factors. Like, what does a dungeon look like when it has an unreliable guide? What does a dungeon look like when it does not have a floor to it? And you get these really great, memorable experiences, like going through the sky dungeon and getting the double claw shot, or going through the residence at the top of the Snow Peak dungeon, where you have the Yeti who's giving you bad directions. And you end up with this really memorable, atmospheric, and just tonally different Zelda. Probably this and Majora's Mask probably have the most similar tones that are dissonant from the tones of other Zelda games. Yeah, one of my favorite games, one of my favorite Zelda experiences. And Twilight Princess HD, you know, come to think of it, it's hard to remember what all they changed about it. But yeah, I played the game so many times on Wii, it's hard to think of what's different. I mean, the controls are different. It's the GameCube version of the game, effectively, and I believe they did add some aiming elements to it with motion, which is really nice. The motion aiming was, or the IR aiming, was one of the best parts of the Wii version. But anyway, I digress. Zelda games are always awesome. Those are two really great ones. I believe this would be number 7 on the list, number 7 or 8, somewhere in there, is New Super Mario Bros. U/ New Super Luigi U. And again, I'm going to count those two games together because one is just the DLC or expansion for the other. But yeah, I mean, this game probably gets maligned a little too much than it actually deserves because it came out in such close proximity to New Super Mario Bros. 2. And, it's the same thing that everyone else says. You know, all of these New Super Mario Bros. Games came out within a few years of each other. There's, you know, a little bit of distance between Wii and the original DS version. But, you know, you had Wii and then 2 and then U not too long after. You get those in pretty quick succession. And, you know, we were in a time from the DS and the Wii era where we're just getting tons of Mario games right and left. On the DS, I think actually the only one on the DS, so you had 64 and you had New Super Mario Brothers, but on the Wii you get Galaxy 1 and 2, you get New Super Mario Brothers, and the 3DS rolls around, and you're getting New Super Mario Brothers 2, then you get New Super Mario Brothers U on the Wii U, Super Mario 3D Land, Super Mario 3D World. We're living in a time of just this glut of Mario games, and they're all really high quality, but you kind of forget that when you're experiencing so much of them. And I think in a vacuum, if it could be experienced without the context of its other games, of its other contemporary Mario games, I think New Super Mario Bros. U would probably be viewed in a very different light. I think that it is a game that is very well designed in terms of the level layout and level construction. I think it's probably the biggest tripping block, other than the context in which it was released, is the squirrel suit. Not really a great power-up or great addition to the Mario universe. But it does some interesting things with switch blocks and feels a little bit more like Super Mario World, even though these new Super Mario Bros. Games are still very much this take on the Super Mario Bros. 3 formula. And the one thing that it does that just always sticks with me is that there is a stage in the sky world that where the direction, the path you take in order to enter it, just the castle stage, the path you take to enter it, there's an unlockable path that takes you up behind the castle through the back, affects where you enter the stage. And that is something that I really hope that they experiment with more in the future of 2D Mario games, because that could be a really interesting way and a really nice incentive to try to unlock multiple paths and find multiple exits, which is something that I really love in 2D Mario games, is finding all the different ways that you can exit stages and just building this spider web of a map that takes you an unsuspectable directions. And of course, New Super Luigi U plays through similar stages, abbreviated stages of New Super Mario Brothers with different layouts, and just has this extra layer of insanity on it because you're playing as Luigi, who runs faster and jumps higher but has zero traction, and it has like timers on it. So this is a really fun take on how Mario stages are built, and just it forces you to keep running forward, which is something that I really love Mario games, is trying to have like those just stages where you have to dash from one end to the other and pull off these really acrobatic jumps. Next up on the list is Pikmin 3, which is a game that I really love. Really beautiful game. Really fun use of all of the new Pikmin and all of the Pikmin, like all the five different types of Pikmin used really well to build these lateral puzzles where stages will open up when you return to them because you've come back to them with different Pikmin. And for someone who likes to multitask, like has all these different goals and objectives on each map to and allows you to really try to go after as much as you can by having the different captains. Just what a really amazing take on the Pikmin formula, and absolutely worth the wait between Pikmin 2 and Pikmin 3. Hopefully we won't have to wait as long for Pikmin 4, but it's a franchise that it seems that when they do make a new game, they do something to maintain the atmosphere and the feel of the game, but they're going to do something that will change the way that you play it, which is great. So from going from 1 to 2, you get rid of the time limit, which allows you to be much more exploration focused. And in 3, you kind of have that time limit. You definitely have a limit of days because you will eventually run out of food. But you have the urgency of the first one because you have that scarcity of food at the beginning, but then you have that freedom of exploration as you get later into the game because you have a bunch of food stockpiled up. You can't go forever. You can't just grow Pikmin for, you know, 60 days and expect to just be fine, but you do have a lot more freedom to the pace at which you play because you have a lot more resources available. So I thought it was a really great blend of the two, and having the flying Pikmin and the rock Pikmin in there as well really changes the way that they throw hazards in your path and changes the way that you open up the world and discover new areas. Up next, Rayman Legends, and here comes another 2D side-scrolling platformer. We're going to see a few more of those before I'm done here. But Rayman Legends, like I was talking about with Affordable Space Adventures, really embraced that asynchronous multiplayer. And, you know, some people, especially when it ended up on other systems, didn't really like the Murphy elements to the game. I thought it was really fun to have that second character there to like preside over as this sort of god figure to construct the levels for you, especially when you're trying to do those levels quickly. But so it's really great creative level design to this game, just a great variety to the types of levels and the types of things you're doing in levels. And of course the music levels, every single one of them is just fucking great. How you just platforming to the music and how it all lines up so well when you're executing it well. It reminds me a lot of Bit Trip Runner 2. Yeah, I mean, I don't think I have a whole lot else to say about the game. You got all these different playable, goofy characters. It's a shame that this one did not retain its Wii U exclusivity, but I understand why, and it's absolutely a game worth playing. If you don't own a Wii U and do plan on getting a Switch, Rayman Legends is something that you should absolutely be on your radar. It's a really fantastic 2D side-scroller. The 10th game on my personal top 15 Wii U games is Star Fox Zero. And this is a game came out earlier. Actually, I shouldn't even be saying this year anymore. Is that 2017? Came out in 2016. About halfway through 2016. Well, no, early 2016. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. It is a game that I thought was very well designed in terms of the level construction. I thought they did a really great job of showing you how to use all of these different mechanics. I do think that they threw too many different control schemes at you right toward the beginning, and I think that if this game were just structured a little bit differently, a lot more people would have gotten on board with it, even with the crazy control scheme and dual scheme stuff. But this game was an example of Nintendo's tendency to double down on things where maybe they should compromise. But anyway, neither here nor there. They said motion is how you're going to play, and motion is how you will have to play this game forever. I don't think that this one is a likely candidate for a Switch port, because I think that would compromise Miyamoto's vision for the game, and Miyamoto does have a stubborn side. So I don't think that I don't think we're going to see this one as a remake with traditional controls, but maybe we will, and I'd be happy to see that, because I think that it is a really fun Star Fox game with some really fun levels that more people should experience. And if you were personally turned off by the motion controls or the dual screen stuff, I would say give this game a chance. It is a game that is specifically designed for replay. Like most Star Fox games, it is not a game that you play once and then you're done with. It's not this disposable experience. It is a game that they want, that is built so that you play through it and then you do it again. And you try to unlock different things. And you're replaying levels and trying to unlock multiple paths and going for the different medals and collectibles and stuff. And I think that when you're replaying and you're used to the patterns of which enemies fly at you, the controls really start to stick in and just become muscle memory. And you start to see the advantage of being able to fly in one direction and shoot in another. And your brain starts to rewire itself to think, okay, just because I'm going this way doesn't mean I have to shoot this way. And I do think it's a really fun twist on the Star Fox formula that, you know, what will probably just be an unappreciated game for you know, the rest of time, for as long as games continue to exist. I think that that Star Fox Zero is a game that people really should give a chance. Next up on the list is Super Mario 3D World. And again, this is what I was saying about Kirby and the Rainbow Curse, just 10 times louder for Super Mario 3D World, because what a fun multiplayer 3D platformer experience, and just embraces all of the silliness and the wackiness that Nintendo really loves to bring to video games. One of the best times I had playing through this game was just replaying levels with my brother and his wife when they were in town, and fighting over the crown and fighting over who would get the grayed out green star because they were worth the most points, and trying to beat each other to the finish line and go after the person with the crown. It becomes this counter-cooperative experience where you're trying to beat the level, but also trying to beat each other. And really fun level designs. And I hope that Nintendo takes this general approach to world creation, because this one, unlike New Super Mario Bros. U, does not strictly adhere to the environmental schemes that are usually associated, especially with 2D Mario games. You have your desert world, your forest world, your water world, and so on and so forth. It just gets... it allows much more creative freedom to the level designers when they don't have to build something specifically for a fire level. And this game does have like all these different environmental mechanics and stuff that they introduce and they use, and they get the most out of them, and then they move on, which is appreciated, because you don't have these repeating ideas very much over and over in this game. Levels are very distinct from each other because they have not only various visual cues, but just the things you're doing in the levels. And of course, you have your cat suit, which is a really fun mechanic in this game, a really fun power-up suit, because it adds the verticality to the levels for climbing up walls. You got your raccoon suit, which is cool. So you have the power-ups, and your fire flowers is, of course, in there, and your Starman, and you have the double cherry. So, you know, you have some cool stuff in this game, some cool power-ups to play with that make it a very memorable experience. And as long as we're on the Mario train here, Super Mario Maker is, of course, up next. And this is one that Ryan would also highly recommend. Just the ability to make whatever stages you want, and you just have this cornucopia of stages to choose from the internet. And some people come up with some really creative stuff. Some people come with some not creative, so creative stuff. But, you know, there's something out there for everyone You know, when, no matter what sort of stage you like playing, you will find something in there that somebody has made, and you will find some stuff, some really great stuff that people have made. From, you know, if auto runner levels are your thing, or you just like hearing what people can do with the music in the game, that's in there too. If you're like me and you like levels that you just have to dash through as quickly as you can, those are in there. If you just like the most impossible, cannot beat levels in the world, those are of course in there too. So this game has some for everyone. And like the making tool, like to actually construct levels, it is really fun. They gamified a level creation kit, which is really fun because you just have like this tactile experience with the game, and it's just so quick to go from constructing to playtesting, which is something that I really enjoyed as well. I'm the sort of navel-gazing narcissist that really loves playing my own levels. And as we're rounding up the list here, we got three more to go. Up next, Tokyo Mirage Sessions Sharp FE is on the list. And this is a game that I really loved. And I really loved the battle system in this game and seeing all the kooky, crazy animations. And I really loved how the battles in this game, when you enter these dungeons, you have a handful of enemies and a handful of configurations that they can come in. And just experimenting with the party that you're running with to see what party is going to chain together the most session attacks and what party members are going to get you through battles the most efficiently, depending on the configuration. And also trying to incorporate how characters are going to level up, even, and try to keep them all even when they're leveling up, because maybe you're using certain characters more than others. But just a really fun battle system, really strategic boss fights, and this crazy like neon and bright color palette that makes everything so visually attractive. These, they very specifically designed and built dungeons that require you to solve different puzzles and progress through them in a very deliberate manner. I really appreciate with all of the exit points, you can go back and change up your gear and improve stuff. Yeah, I just think that this game was very caringly crafted, which I really appreciate out of this. Number 14 on my alphabetical list here is Xenoblade Chronicles X, of course. Put nearly 200 hours into this game. I talked about it a ton over the past couple years. I just really love existing in that world and having my characters move throughout the world and just uncovering all sorts of different elements and mechanics constantly, whether it was like in the 6 hour of playing or in the 180th hour of playing the game. I was constantly just finding out new things and new ways to play it and new ways to approach certain boss fights. What an amazing experience. And I am, of course, super excited for Xenoblade Chronicles 2, which is coming to Switch at some point. And it does, I think the implication, we talked about this before last month, is that it is more of a follow-up to Xenoblade Chronicles, which means it'll be a little bit more linear of an experience, or just won't throw you into this big world and say, then go fucking find some stuff and plant some probes. I do hope that they one day revisit the Chronicles X method of design here, where they have that big world and you're just given this freedom to just go explore. Even I think I'm glad that they're returning to the more linear style. I think it's going to be really fun to experience that again. But if they did like a back and forth between the Chronicles and the Chronicles X style, I'd be really happy with that. And then last up, number 15 is Yoshi's Woolly World, another 2D platformer for the Wii U. And I really love Yoshi's Woolly World and how the visual style is also crucial to the mechanics of the game. Really great level design and level variety to the environmental elements and environmental mechanics to the levels. A really fun cooperative experience as well. Just a really beautiful game, and everything feels so tactile, as if you can just grab everything. I had so much fun with this game and just going through levels and trying to collect everything. I never did 100% it because some of the challenge mode stuff toward the end got a little bit too frustrating than what I wanted out of the game. That is my personal top 15 eShop and Wii U games, 30 plus if you're counting my honorable mentions. Really great things that you can download or buy on your Wii U. It's a system that certainly had its problems. It was a flawed system that was never, like, and Nintendo never really quite figured out what it was that they wanted to do, and certainly never figured out what it was they wanted to say about the darn thing. It was a system that, from the beginning, the messaging was confused. The plan for the games seemed to have been poorly considered. And I think that the Nintendo noticed the writing on the wall probably sooner than a lot of other people and quickly shifted its sights onto its next generation or onto the 3DS. And it was a sad situation. It's sad to see a system where they had promised so much of this sort of revival of the focus on the core game player and all of this third-party support just evaporate so quickly. But the Wii U, I think, probably won't be... I don't think we're looking at a GameCube situation where it'll be as fondly remembered as the GameCube, but it has a really great library of games. Not like a vast library. I think you'd be hard-pressed. Like, I just listed off 22 retail games. I think you might be hard-pressed to think of 45 or 50 really great ones. I mean, like, if you were looking for a system that every few weeks or every couple of months would give you a really memorable experience, I think that the Wii U delivered on that. Especially if you like RPGs in the last half of the system anyway, or 2D platformers. That's the system's bread and butter right there. So anyway, I really enjoyed my time with my Wii U. It's not quite over yet because I will have it, like I mentioned before, hooked up in one room or another for some eShop things and for the Shovel Knight expansions that are coming. But I'm certainly at this point excited for the Switch, ready to move on, ready to move forward with Breath of the Wild and Bomberman and I Am Setsuna. I'm excited about the future of the Switch. I'm excited to see what they bring to E3. They really do need to show off a lot of games and a lot of variety of games at E3. I've gone way off track here. I'm going to close this out and then we'll be back. We'll be back in about a week with the Pokemon show. So, till next time, everybody.